Greetings. This is Justin Allen, the Elite Nurse Practitioner. Welcome to the Elite Nurse Practitioner Show, a podcast dedicated to nurse practitioner entrepreneurism and achieving financial freedom, where I talk directly with nurse practitioners who need help. Listen up. Our market is saturated. Jobs can be scarce. We are underpaid. We are undervalued. We are taken advantage of by the sharks within the healthcare system, and frankly, screw that, sick of it, and it's time for a change. And listen, I'm here to help make that happen. We are powerful. We can forge a path where we are in control of our career and ultimately our financial and personal well-being. You do not need to submit to healthcare administrators and your doctor overlords. You do not have to take the measly salary. You do not have to work 50 to 60 hours a week. There is a different way, and I'm here to show you that path. This podcast is raw and unfiltered. I have not talked to the nurse practitioners in this podcast prior to the call outside of an email exchange to schedule the episode. What you're about to listen to is a consultation session between a nurse practitioner and myself. It is real, it is unscripted, it is unplanned, and I have no idea what we're going to talk about. Anything and everything can happen during our conversation. The nurse practitioners in these episodes are struggling with an issue in their professional or financial life, and they have reached out to me for help. My goal is to help the nurse practitioner with actionable advice that will enhance and improve their professional, business, and financial life. My other goal is to hopefully help my nurse practitioner sisters and brothers build a more productive, powerful, and free life. So I hope the content and information within these podcast episodes does just that. All right, on to the episode. Hello, everyone. Today, we'll be talking to Diane, who is a family nurse practitioner. Currently, she owns and operates a primary care clinic full-time that also provides wellness and addiction services. She's needing assistance integrating additional services into her practice, including hormone replacement therapy, to increase her revenue and also on ways to grow her business. Hey, Diane, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Thanks for hopping on here. So, yeah, tell us about yourself. How long you've been a nurse practitioner for, and how long you've been running this primary care practice of yours?
I've been a nurse practitioner for 8 years. I went solo about in 2018 and opened a one-room practice within a psychiatrist's office, and then was approached by somebody to open a larger space in an area, a more, affluent area. I opened that in August of 2019. So I'm on my fourth year practicing in this area. And, through COVID and, all the ebbs and tides of that. Last year around May, I doubled my space. And I was doing quite well before I doubled my space and doubled my costs, and just really been struggling over the past year to kind of play catch up with all that. Thinking that growing my primary care practice as sort of the quote unquote bread and butter, the insurance based side of the practice, would kind of help me to kind of almost easier to market and easier to kind of get people in the door because there's so much demand for primary care. But it's been really, really rough, very slow going, problems with, collections and insurances and delays and reimbursements and problems with credentialing and, all the pitfalls of working, with insurances. So that's kind of where I'm at. Yeah. I've been doing some Botox and filler and things like that for the last 4 years. But that's just a little piece of the practice. But of the last year or so, I've become more interested in offering, just based on really demand from my patients, people asking for, in a week's time, I've had, probably four patients that independently asked about peptides. And I was like, I really think I should try to look into this. And that's where I kind of fell into your courses, and I've just taken a bunch of them. I have the monthly membership, and I really have gotten a lot out of them. I'm just finding day to day issues related to really kind of launching it, and having the rubber meet the road. I'd say probably one of the challenges that I find day to day is when you're treating somebody who has hormone or, you know, hormone issues, men with low testosterone, women who are peri, post, menopausal, like, and they're already patients in your primary care, you know, crossing them over into like more of a, you know, cash based, like optimization space is really a tough transition.
Yeah. Yeah. When patients are used to using their insurance, it's difficult to get them to use their cash.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. It's very hard. It's almost impossible to backpedal. Okay. So if you're accepting insurance and you want to start doing cash, it's almost impossible to start backpedaling with current patients. It's going to be really the new patients that, you know, you'll stick with the cash. So my question for you is, like, what's your vision here? What's your goal? Do you want to continue billing insurance for primary care and this kind of stuff, or do you want to just get away from it?
I would say I still do want to do primary care. I mean, I'm looking to maybe further kind of separate the two practices. You know, I do have two LLCs, obviously. You would need that. And one is more, you know, aesthetics and wellness, and the other is just, you know, health. And there are those two divisions. And, you know, I have had patients who are, you know, I mean, obviously interested in the peptides. It's different monitoring, letting people know that, look, if, you know, this is a service that we're starting to offer, it's not covered by insurance, you know, your insurance will pay for the labs, but for me to monitor, adjust and things like that, this is something that happens outside. And then really just trying to figure out, like, I have a patient who has told me, like, as a man, the easier you make it, the better. Like, if you, you know, a 1 monthly fee that covers the testosterone and maybe additionally, you know, adding on peptides or things like that, but trying to figure out how to price it, how to structure it, that's where I'm kind of like getting lost in the sauce.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just talk some numbers here real quick. So the insurance part of your practice, the primary care and stuff, how much do you make a month estimated? I don't need an exact number. Just to, you know, just
anywhere. My goal was to get to 30,000. I think 27 is about where I average.
Okay. So mid 20, yeah. Okay. So 25, 30,000 bucks. That's the insurance, the cash part, you know, the wellness kind of cash part with, you know, the Botox and the wellness stuff. How much are you bringing in a month there? Or is that included in the 20?
I would say anywhere from 3 to 6,000.
Not as much. Okay. So my recommendation is that if you want to start moving more towards this cash-based stuff, because insurance is driving you crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So if you want to start moving towards this cash-based stuff, my advice would be to stop seeing or stop accepting any kind of new patients into the primary care insurance part. Okay. Just kind of let that keep you afloat. All right. You know, you got a base of patients, you're generating, you know, $25,000-$30,000 a month, gross, you know, that's going to keep your business afloat. And then you can really start doubling down on the cash component side of your business. That's what I would do. And so you can do the peptide, you can do the hormone replacement therapy, weight loss, et cetera, through that. And like you were saying, yeah, there's going to be some patients who are more than willing to pay for it. Even some of the primary care patients, you know, that might want to get on board with it. They'll see it in your practice. They'll see it maybe in like some brochures on the desks, tables or whatever in your waiting room. They might be interested in it. Then you can talk to them about it. You know, yeah, insurance doesn't cover this. It's a cash-based thing. If you're interested, I'm more than happy to, you know, see you and talk you through it, whatever. And you just bill all that through that separate entity, right? So, So you could definitely do that. And then you can just really double down on advertising and really building out that part of the practice. That's what I would do if it was me.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to throw away the primary care. I mean, you still enjoy it, it sounds like, but you kind of just, you know, you want to get away from the insurance. So, you know, that's a lot of money a month. You don't want to just throw it away. So I would just kind of just keep it there, but just be very, very selective on what patients that you see for that stuff. Now, another option that you can do is you can bill the patient's insurance for the visits. Okay. You can bill under whatever code that you want. So let's just say, hypothetical thing here. You want to treat someone with a peptide. Let's just call it sermorelin or whatever, to help with recovery or fatigue or an injury, whatever it is. And so you can see them, you can bill insurance for the visit. Mm-hmm. Okay. You just use diagnosis code for fatigue or
whatever.
Yeah, exactly. just whatever. Okay. Just use whatever diagnosis code that's applicable to while you're seeing them. And then your intervention is that peptide or that hormone or whatever that insurance will not cover because it's considered not a medical necessity. Right. And then you can bill that patient cash for it to your heart's content. And you can totally do that. You can do that with Medicare, Medicaid, private insurance. So you could do that as well.
Okay.
So you could do that for weight loss. You could do that for HRT. You could do it for almost all services. Okay. There are some very large nationwide practices. Okay. Men's health practices. I'm not going to say any names that bill insurance for the visits. And then they will typically just charge the patient for the testosterone. And so you just, see the patient once a month, once every couple of months, whatever, 99213, 99214 visit, whatever, make $100, whatever it is. And then you charge the patient for the testosterone through a compounding pharmacy and you can just charge cash for it because it's not considered a medical necessity because their testosterone level was 325 and it wasn't 299.
Okay. And right. I mean, marking up the testosterone.
Like, how do you do that?
Yeah. Like you're paying the compounding pharmacy and then charging.
Yeah. You just charge them, whatever. So you can either mark up the price of the testosterone or you can do it as a monthly subscription or something that insurance wouldn't cover. It doesn't really matter how you do it if you're going to be billing insurance for the visits. So you would just order the testosterone from a compounding pharmacy. They would ship it to the patient and then they would just bill you. And so the patient would never even see what the price of it is.
Right.
Then you just charge them whatever.
About it, like, when you go to the hairdresser, the product a hairdresser uses costs about $5 and they charge you $400 for the service. You know what I mean? Like, it's done,
Exactly.
So you're rolling in your services into the cost of the product.
Right. Exactly. If it's cash only, then yeah, for sure. You're charging, a monthly fee or whatever for the visits and the testosterone and everything, or you're just charging a one-time fee that, includes it all. So that's the right line of thinking.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So those are your options, really, what you could do, it's a lot to process. So, I will tell you this, if you accept insurance for, general niche services, you will get busy really quick because most places will not accept insurance for those things. So you just make it more affordable for the patient, right? So as an example, let's just say, let's use semaglutide weight loss, for example. Most places charge, let's call it $350 a month, right? And that includes the visits and the semaglutide, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if you're billing the patient's insurance once a month, for follow-up, 99213, 99214, whatever. You're making, let's just call it $100 from that. And then the semaglutide is going to cost you, let's just say about $100 or so a month.
It doesn't cost that much. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm getting it 75. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. 75 to 100. It just really depends on where you're getting it from. Okay. And so you get that from the compounding pharmacy for that price. And then you can just you can double that. You can 1.5 exit, whatever makes sense to you, because you're making money from the insurance and then you're going to make money from the markup.
Okay.
Yeah. If you do that, it's a lot more affordable from an out-of-pocket perspective for a lot of patients. And so that's what I'm saying, that you'll get busy really quick, but you still have to deal with all the bullshit surrounding insurance.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. But you could get busy really quick.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how do you advertise that? You just say, like, you just Because, I mean, I have a patients within my practice that I have a couple thousand in my database. I have at least 2,700 from my old database, and I don't 1,000 in my new database. So I could even then market it to my current patients.
Yeah. So marketing to your current customer base is the cheapest and most effective thing that you can do from a marketing perspective, because they're already established customers. And so selling them on more stuff is a lot easier than finding a new client, right? So yeah, you can either just send them a mass email, a letter, whatever it is. These are the new services that we're providing or whatever. Or you can put posters up in your lobby. You can mention it during visits, that sort of thing. That's kind of the way you would do that.
You know, it's funny because my original thinking about it was that I was going to be different than I had worked with a place that was doing a lot of hormone optimization, you know, and they were charging people a lot of money. And I know what they paid for it. And, you know, they take something that's 100 and charge 400 for it. And I just felt like it was better to charge people for my services and not upcharge on the products. But to be honest, people don't want to pay you for your services. They want to pay for the products. Right. You know what I mean? They really don't want that. And that's what I'm finding. I really thought like that would be the way to go, but they really would rather pay some fixed amount for the testosterone to be sent to them and the peptides to be sent to them monthly, and then not really have to worry about like, is this a visit going to be $399 because it's an initial visit, or is it going to be $199, or is it going to be, you know, because it's a 3-month visit? So I think this really does simplify it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Patients like to hold something, like to see something, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So you just include the service in that, or just bill their insurance for the service and then just charge them for the product. Right. If you do that, you'll make maybe a little bit less than what you can make with 100% cash, or you can make a little bit more. It really just depends on how much you mark that up and, you know, how many patients that you can see. I'm telling you, you will get busy if you accept insurance.
Like,
you say all major insurances accepted, including Medicaid or Medicare or whatever that it is, and you're going to get so many phone calls. Because my men's health clinic, I would say 50% of people who call want to use their insurance. We don't accept it, and we never convert that patient to an actual patient. You know, that potential patient, they never convert to an actual paying customer because we don't accept insurance. If I got credentialed today and started accepting insurance, I would double my patient census.
Yeah, well, you also double your work.
You double your work, and you also double the headache from insurance.
Yeah.
Right. But you make a lot of money though, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really good to know, because I was like really trying to think like, okay, well, if, you know, for instance, okay, so what do you do when you have a guy who has low testosterone? He comes to you. Okay, I had a guy a month ago. His testosterone was 100. That's so low, right?
Yeah, super low.
Oh, he looked like flat as anything. Like, it just nothing, no life to him at all.
Yeah.
That was the real medical basis for it. Like, once that person starts, you know, their insurance is approving it, like, how long are they going to cover it for? Like, his testosterone is going to go up, but his body's not making it. Like, what, like, do you at some point convert that person over to like a cash-based testosterone, or do they continue to cover it, or what?
Insurance. I mean, they should still continue to cover it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if they were truly hypogonadal per, you know, their guidelines, then they should continue paying for it long term.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing with testosterone replacement therapy, you know, if you're billing their insurance and you're seeing them once every couple months, you know, let's say you make $100 off the visit, you know, the testosterone vial costs you, you know, for a 200 milligram and 5 mL, it costs you like $30, between $20 and $30, depending on what pharmacy you're getting it from. Cost you nothing, you know, and you charge the patient $100 for it. To them, you know, that's 6 to 8 weeks worth of testosterone for $100. it's not that much, you know? Yeah. And you're making a profit of $75 to $100, depending on, you know, how much you charge them. And plus you're making the money off the visit. That's not that bad, especially when you have 1,000 patients.
Yeah, right. You have to multiply that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say the follow-up visits for, you know, a lot of this stuff takes what, 15 minutes, 5 minutes sometimes? Like, yeah. It's nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that way, I mean, they are your primary care visit. So you're a patient. So you're able to kind of like, you know, address everything, you know, you know, make sure you're following all the other things that you should with testosterone therapy. It's true. It's good. It's just good care. Yeah.
It is. I agree.
That's good. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I just thought, like, how am I going to go outside of insurance? Like, I'm so stuck.
Yeah.
But, and then not wanting to mark up, you know, so much. But you're right. You can do both.
You can do both. Right. I mean, you're credentialed and you have all these patients, you know. If you were starting from scratch, brand new, I would recommend probably sticking with cash, you know.
Yeah.
But you have this established business and thousands of patients, like, you can't backpedal. Yeah. You're going to lose a lot of people. Yeah.
Okay. So that's cool. That's good to know.
Yeah. Yeah. So what services are you interested in providing? You said you're interested in providing HRT and peptides predominantly, or?
Yeah. I have a particular question, and this might be something that would be, you'd want to put offline or edit out or something, but two things. One is, I've encountered this company called, is it Integrative Peptides? What are they called?
I'll save you the explanation. Is it the business that the website that sells research peptides?
Yeah. Well, they're over the counter peptides. The patients.
Yeah. It's for research purposes, and that shit's made in China. So, you know, if patients want to use it, I say, you know what? Good luck. I have no idea what the hell you're taking, and I will not be monitoring it for you.
I mean, to me, a patient brought it to my attention and he said, you know, oh, they have great reviews. They have great reviews. And I contacted them because I was like, oh, interesting packaging, interesting stuff. But like, I've never heard of anybody swallowing, you know, thymosin and BPC, yes, but not so much. And like, how is this working outside of, you know, where, and I asked them, where's your white papers? Do you have like research that you've done on these different formulations that they're using? And they like had no answer for me. So I just was like, what, how are they doing this? Because we also have to be cognizant of the fact that in like maybe November, is that what they're saying, that they may outlaw some of the peptides?
Yeah. You know, the FDA is always changing their rules and stuff around some of this stuff. You know, they're not going to outlaw all peptides. I wouldn't worry about that. You know, there's just some that's always going to have some regulatory burden to it. And then another peptide will be, you know, available. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. It's out of your control. So don't worry about it. You know, when it comes, it comes, pivot and change, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So, but this website, yeah, you know, listen, I don't know any specific, I don't know the specifics, but a lot of that stuff is made in China. It's sold here for research purposes only. That's bullshit. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows you're taking it for personal use, and you don't know the quality of it. You don't even know what the hell you're taking. And so don't worry too much about that, because trust me, there's a lot of people out there that would rather pay cash for a quality product that they know what they're getting from a compounding pharmacy or whatever, for example. And they know that medical professionals monitoring their blood work and making sure that, you know, it's not causing any side effects. So people who value that are the patients that you want. The people who are going to buy that shit from a website in China, you don't want those people in your practice anyways. They're risky, they're high risk, they're not going to listen to you, they're non-compliant. You don't want those people in your business anyways.
Right. Okay. That's a good perspective. I love your perspective, by the way, on most things.
I'm just telling you how it is. You know, that's just the reality of it.
It's great. And it's really... It's very good. But and the other thing, peptides wise, I've always used Wells, because I knew Wells from a former, and I had an account, but they've been terrible to me. Dinging my credit card. I don't know when anything ships. poor communication. Is Hallandale your favorite?
Listen, what pharmacy I recommend and what pharmacy I like literally changes week to week. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, sometimes Wells is great. Sometimes Hallandale is great. Sometimes Empower is fantastic. Other times they suck. Okay. Shipping times are ridiculous. No one will answer the phone. You know, so I don't really, I can't say yay or nay for any compounding pharmacy because I'm not joking. It literally changes week to week, my opinion on some of these places. So a couple years ago, you could rely on just one pharmacy.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could. Yeah. You know, one pharmacy, you get to know the pharmacist. You'd be able to call for help and questions and things like that. Those days are gone. I don't know what happened to them, but they're gone. And
Semaglutide.
That's pretty much exactly what happened. They got too damn big. Right. And, you know, also factor into COVID and people getting handouts and no one wanting to work and, you know, all that kind of stuff too. Right. It's multifactorial.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they're overworked and understaffed.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. My advice is to have accounts with at least 3 to 4 pharmacies. Okay. And you're going to have to just bounce around. Like I was actually looking at my credit card statement for my men's health clinic a couple of days ago, or whatever. And it's amazing to see how many different pharmacies are on that card. Empower, Hallandale, Shields, APS, Belmar. And like, we ordered from like 6 pharmacies this month. This is ridiculous.
Well, also too, I mean, I don't know if you have somebody that puts the orders in for you. I just find it very time consuming to put the orders in. I mean, I run on a small skeleton crew of people who are wonderful, but you know, one more thing is just a lot.
My MAs do that. I don't do that. That's busy work.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to do it by myself and I'm not being successful. It's taking me a week just to place the order to figure out. Well, I'm at that process too, where I'm like, wait, you know, hold on, let me call the pharmacy back. Well, do I need the 5 ml vial or do I need the 3 ml vial? And how long is this going to last them? Because I really can't tell from what you're saying. Will they be past the beyond use date? Or, you know, like I have all these like crazy little nitpicky questions and I don't really know. Like I have asked you guys a few questions, but I don't want to like burden people. But how do I figure out those details? Like,
well,
you gave me the dosing. You know, like that's been really helpful. When to monitor, what to monitor, all of that has been amazing and has gotten me so far. But like now I'm like, have people who want to order and it's like trying to get like, well, how much is that vial versus that vial? And how much is that long is that going to last? And, you know, that is really where I'm stymied now is like in those details. And that's really kind of holding me back.
Figuring out how long it's going to last. I mean, you just look at the volume and, you know, what you're prescribing. I mean, it's just simple multiplication, right?
No, so, but they don't always publish how much volume is being, you know, the like on Hallandale's site, it's like, you know, 50 milligrams per ml. Well, how many mls is in that vial I'm buying? Like they don't necessarily list it, you know?
So. Yeah. Some of the online portal systems.
Once you figure it out, you're good. You know?
I've noticed that too a few times ordering from some compounding pharmacies. I'm like, how much volume am I getting here? I don't see anything listed here. Like something, it's kind of vague. Yeah. I've noticed that a few times too.
It's a lot of worth.
Yeah. Beyond use date stuff. Okay. Remember the 28 day beyond use date for a vial is a USP regulation. Okay.
Right.
Most pharmacists I've ever spoke to, we're basically just like, yeah, that's kind of bullshit, but we have to put 28 days on there because it's USP. Those vials are good for, you know, months as long as it's refrigerated and sterile technique is used. Okay. So don't lose sleep over that.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Like, you know, I've never have had a negative outcome for anybody using a vial beyond, you know,
90 beyond days or
the 28 days or whatever it is. Yeah. I've never had anyone had an issue with that. And the testosterone vial that I use on myself, like a 10 ml vial will last me like 5 months. It's been expired for 3 months. Guess what? I'm still good. I'm still alive. I've got no infection. I feel great. So what, good. You know, what the hell is this? You know?
Good. Yeah. All right.
That has
freaked out a few people, but it's all good.
Yeah. Don't stress out too much about it. The expiration date, I would worry about, but like the beyond use date, you know, should be discarded after 28 days of, you know, first penetration or opening or whatever. Don't be too concerned about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Sorry. I'm getting you bogged down in the details, but
that's all good.
Back to the big picture is like, yeah, I mean, as far as, I mean, just really, you know, I don't know how much more time we have, but as far as like, you know, these doctors kind of coming in and, you know, I have two sides to my office. I have four rooms total. And it's on a main street right across from public parking, a mile from the DC. Pretty close from a major metropolitan area.
Yeah.
And it's a desirable area. I know, you know, but, you know, that's the thing where I'm like, how quickly am I going to grow that I'm going to need that space? Like, have you had people who see that you're successful, love your location, and kind of like come and kind of court you? Like, when are partnerships like that worth it? And, or is it pretty much like, no, you can, you know, go your own way?
99% of the time, never.
Yeah.
Like, why would you share your equity and revenue with someone else when you don't necessarily need to? The only time I would consider a partnership is that the, you know, a combination of your skills and their skills create something that's truly special. Okay. Or they bring something to the table that is would be very hard for you to ever attain or for you to, you know, basically achieve. Or to do. Like I have one partnership and a couple of business endeavors that I have going on, like one, and the individuals I've partnered with, they all bring a specific skill set and a specific network of people that I don't have, and I bring something special to them. Okay. And it works. Outside of that, I would never partner with anyone for anything if I didn't have to.
Yeah. I mean, in this case, I'm not necessarily looking to partner, but to work adjacently. You know, I'm not necessarily interested today in doing ketamine or infusions that are coming down the pike in the way of, you know, psychedelics and all that kind of stuff. I feel like they're time intensive. And what's your feeling in general about ketamine? I haven't taken your ketamine class, by the way, but.
It works fantastic for treating, you know, depression, especially chronic pain as well. I mean, it's an amazing medication. I mean, I've known people who have been on multiple antidepressants and just could not get out of the spunk for years. And they do a couple ketamine treatments and it cures them. Like it's almost kind of like, you know, like a psilocybin sort of treatment where, you know, there's all these studies coming out on patients who have, you know, PTSD, treatment resistant depression, et cetera. And they do a guided psilocybin trip and it literally cures them. Ketamine's very similar. So the efficacy it's pretty outstanding. I am a full supporter of it. Bringing on some people into your practice that can do that kind of a thing, you know, that might not be something. I mean, that might be something you know, to consider and think about if you feel like
it. I listened to a podcast that was obviously it was done by an ER doctor, and basically he was saying like, you know, you really do want somebody who's like trained in kind of critically monitoring people because with these medicines, sometimes you do have to like respond minute by minute with some IV push here, IV push there. Like that seemed like a lot. Like just, and this was listening to like a 40-minute podcast that this ER doctor was giving on setting up a ketamine practice from an ER doctor's perspective. And I thought that kind of like was scary to me. Like, first of all, that's time consuming. You know, I have to sit and watch somebody and monitor their vitals. Like I could be in and out doing Botox, you know? And making, you know, that better use of that space. So I'm really like curious as to what your experience has been as far as that goes, but I should just take the class probably.
Yeah. Take the course. Listen, I don't do ketamine. Okay. I never have, and I never plan to. It's not my thing. Okay. The lady, her name's Heather. She collaborated with me on the ketamine course. She's the expert. Okay. So she'd be she discusses the clinical components of that course. It's like 6 or 7 hours of her talking. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I don't know specifics, but I do know this. You need experience with monitoring patients. Yes. Who are sedated. It wouldn't be wise doing it without that experience. Okay.
Yeah. That's good.
So, but I mean, if you can partner with some people that can, you know, train you to do that and do a little bit of that as a separate business sort of a thing inside your practice or whatever, that might be something to consider.
Yeah. No, I mean, after listening to that and, you know, I'll listen to the class. I mean, you know, I was like, wow, it would actually be kind of cool to have an ER doctor here monitoring people doing things. You'd feel like you were doing it the right way, the best way, which I think would lend a lot of legitimacy, you know?
Sure. You can have RNs monitor that.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, like I have a buddy who is a flight medic.
Been
on a helicopter. He gives ketamine all the time to people. Like that dude can monitor some ketamine therapy in a practice. Like he knows his shit more than probably most docs do, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's case by case basis, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So, any other questions?
This is great. I've taken a lot of your courses. I'm a big fan. Like I'm in awe of the work that you've done and how much you've helped me. I wish I knew you 5 years ago and I would be probably in a very different place, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. Listen, you have a business that's successful. It's bringing money in. Could it be doing better? Sure. Of course it could, right? Most businesses could be doing better. You just do need a couple tweaks here. Maybe, you know, I think doing the insurance and doing some cash stuff, combining it together, billing insurance for the service, charging cash for the non-medically necessity, you know, the non-medical necessary product, medication, whatever. I think it's probably gonna be your best option. So I say if you do that, you're probably gonna increase your revenue significantly over the next year. I don't see how you couldn't.
And marketing.
Yeah.
So marketing. Okay.
Well, I like to end the episode with you asking me a question. Do you have any questions for me? You know, any personal questions, any curiosities, anything like that?
No, nothing comes to mind. You've been great. Thank you.
All right. Works for me. So it's a pleasure talking with you. And if you ever want to do a follow-up, just let me know.
Okay. Thanks, Justin.
All right, Take care.
Bye. Be well. Bye-bye.
All right. Hope everyone enjoyed the conversation with Diane. Great episode. You know, she has a practice, been open 5 years. She probably could be doing better, right? $30,000 a month is not great, especially with expenses. You know, she's doing okay. I think that just tweaking this practice and just billing insurance for services and then charging cash for medications and products that aren't going to be covered by insurance because insurance deems them as not a medical necessity, even though it's going to help improve the patient's quality of life significantly. I think that's a good model for her, right? So remember, if you accept insurance for a prolonged period of time, the patient, they're going to get used to it. Backpedaling and then switching over to cash only is going to end up in disaster. Okay. You cannot do that. If you do that, it has to be a very, very slow transition. All right. So if you have an insurance-based practice and you want to convert to cash, it needs to be done over multiple years. Okay. Or you can do what Diane's going to do. All right. Just charge for the services, you know, bill insurance for that, and then charge for, you know, whatever it is that you want for the medication, the testosterone, the peptide, whatever it is. Okay. So it's a good model and it's a profitable model. And if you do that model, you're going to get busy really quick. All right. Everyone enjoy this episode. Talk to you guys later. Thanks. Bye. Thank you for listening to the show. Quick legal disclaimer. The content of this podcast is meant for informational and entertainment purposes only and should not be used as legal, financial, medical, regulatory, or practice-specific advice. For information pertaining to your specific legal, financial, medical, or practice-specific needs, please be sure to consult with your lawyer, CPA, medical director, and or your state's practice laws and the most up-to-date clinical guidelines. As always, do your due diligence when it comes to any information found online and in podcasts. The content in this podcast is copyrighted by Galaxy Medical Southwest 2023 and cannot be duplicated, rebroadcasted, or reproduced without our written permission.